Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm Tom Lyons. We're broadcasting from the fair today, and on today's show, we learn how the Minnesota National Guard will be helping the Afghanistan farmers with ag solutions, and we hear from the 148th Fighter Wing and the 133rd Airlift Wing of the Minnesota National Guard. Joining me now is Colonel Eric Allness, commander of the 135th Agribusiness Development Team from the Minnesota National Guard. Colonel, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you very much, Tom. Glad to be here.
Colonel, can you tell us how long does it take to get to become a full colonel in the Minnesota National Guard?
It takes. It took me about 21 years. Some people are a little bit quicker, and some people it takes a little bit longer, but it takes a long time to move up the ranks within the National Guard, as it would any service.
And in your years in the Guard, have you been deployed, sir?
Yes, I have. I've deployed to Bosnia in 2003 and 2004, as well as a number of shorter deployments throughout the U.S. and other places throughout the world. I had a short deployment to Greece in 1997 and also to Norway in 1991.
And how difficult is that on your family when you're gone for extended periods of time?
It certainly has an impact on your families. And fortunately, one of the jobs I had in the military years ago was a family program coordinator from 1991 through 1995. And that really allowed me to gain insight on the importance of making sure families are prepared and making them part of the process and part of the team, too. So as you learned, talking with my wife a little earlier, she's very involved with it, too, being on the board of directors of a rest camp, a military veterans camp, and also with the Washington County Yellow Ribbon Network.
She's very excited about those things, and we hear about it every time we see her, but that's good. That's good. Like to see people excited and passionate, don't you?
Absolutely.
Colonel, 25 years ago, or when you started in the Guard, what caused you to go in?
Well, initially, I was going through the ROTC, the Reserve Officer Training Program, the basically officer training program at Mankato State University, and I wanted to continue my education, get my master's degree, and at that time, there was an opportunity for me to go into the reserve component, so I started looking around, and the National Guard really provided the right kind of situation for me where I could continue my education and start my career as an officer in the military, and it worked out fabulous.
Now, Colonel, let's talk about the Minnesota National Guard for a minute. We pull Minnesota National Guard troops from armories all over the state, every county in the state. How many National Guard, Army, and soldiers and airmen do we have?
There's approximately 13,500 National Guardsmen in the state of Minnesota. The largest component is the Army National Guard, with over 11,000 soldiers spread throughout 63 training facilities throughout the state. And then we also have two Air Guard wings, one in Duluth, the 148th Fighter Wing that's equipped with F-16 fighter jets, and then we have the 133rd Air Wing that's equipped with C-130 transportation aircraft out of Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport.
And Colonel, the Minnesota National Guard has a dual mission, a federal mission and a state mission. Can you explain those to us?
Absolutely. The federal mission is that we answer to the President of the United States and to the taxpayers to answer the call to duty when the nation is threatened so that we can go forward and defend the country and make sure that we're safe and we continue our way of life, as we have done many times since 9/11 and every major conflict before that. The second major mission we have is a state mission, which is to help support and maintain the life and property of the citizens of Minnesota. So, unfortunately, it seems every spring we're going up to the Red River Valley area to help fight floods. Anytime there's a tornado or any significant domestic emergency, we're called to, by order of the governor, to respond to help the citizens of Minnesota.
Now, Colonel, in the last 10 years, we've had many deployments on a federal basis. And I have to ask you this question. I keep getting asked by civilians, isn't it unfair these National Guard troops are being called up for deployment? Is it possible that there's a single airman or soldier in the Minnesota National Guard that isn't aware that he or she's going to be deployed?
You're absolutely right on that, Tom. Since 9/11, every individual in the Army and Air Guard has the opportunity to either enlist or join the military or re-enlist in. So they're making the decision fully aware of what the obligation they have. And in fact, in one of my previous jobs, I was a liaison with our members of Congress, and we get more congressional complaints about people in the military who were not able to deploy because their unit was not called to duty than people are saying that they didn't want to go again.
So these are really volunteers. They understand they're going to be deployed, and they keep signing up anyway.
Absolutely. But also we want to make sure we let the employers know, you raise your hand to volunteer when you sign up for the service. Thereafter, you're ordered to go on mission. So we appreciate their support of those service members and know that those service members really value their jobs back here and appreciate the support of their employers while they're gone.
It'd be impossible to have those 14,000 troops without the support of the Guard and Reserve from those employers, wouldn't it?
Absolutely correct.
We're speaking with Colonel Eric Alness, commander of the 135th Agribusiness Development Team, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour right here on News Talk, AM 1130. Colonel, in the last 10 years, how many deployments have the Minnesota National Guard been on?
Well, depending how you count it up, we have over 20,000 service members who have had individual deployments since 9/11. And that starts out even from the very first days afterwards. And a lot of people remember right after those uncertain days after 9/11, they'd see the guardsmen in the airports providing the security, helping provide that confidence of what's gone on. And that the government was there and that the Guard was there making sure that the airports were safe. From that time, we moved on to Bosnian deployments in the Balkans and KFOR in the Kosovo area. And then at that time, those were our largest deployments since World War II with over 2,300 service members going. Since that time, we've had the brigade deploy to Iraq, and now they're just on their second deployment to Kuwait. So, we're sending units across the world to the Balkans, to Iraq, and to Afghanistan on a regular basis, on a regular rotational basis.
So our Minnesota National Guard troops have been deployed to 35 countries around the world, out there serving our country and protecting our way of life.
Absolutely, including rotations down to Antarctica. We have an Air Guard member who goes down there and winters over as a weather person. So we're across the world.
I think my military producer wants to go there next week. Can you fix that up?
We might be able to help him out with that.
Colonel, I understand you've got a real interesting deployment coming up to Afghanistan. Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. I have the privilege of commanding the 135th Agribusiness Development Team, and that'll be deploying to Afghanistan starting in about the November timeframe. We'll be mobilized in October. And what we'll be doing is helping to build a sustainable and legal agribusiness sector within Afghanistan. We'll be deployed there for approximately a year.
Yeah, that sounds unusual. We're sending Minnesota National Guard troops to Afghanistan to work on agribusiness. It doesn't sound like a normal mission to me.
Yeah, it is pretty non-traditional, but really, if you think about it, it makes sense that Afghanistan, and in fact, I was talking to a friend of mine at Super Value, and he said in the 1970s, he remembers that Afghanistan raisins were the best produce they had. They were very popular, but they couldn't get them anymore. And really what happened is Afghanistan has gone through three decades of war, and a lot of their people have really forgotten some of the lessons. They're great farmers. They just don't remember how to farm real effectively. So this gives us an opportunity to go in there and help them relearn those lessons to be effective farmers, to do it in a sustainable method and a legal method so that they can go on and build a good government.
Colonel, we're going to have to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this deployment to Afghanistan. Sounds fascinating to me. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk, AM 1130. Please stay with us. We'll be right back from the Minnesota State Fair.
Today marks the 10th anniversary of 9/11/2001. My memory goes back to the initial events that unfolded that day. I remember the horror and disbelief as facts began to unravel about a terrorist attack on the Twin Towers, the Pentagon, and the field in Pennsylvania. By day's end, almost 3,000 Americans perished, more than the number of men and women who were killed at Pearl Harbor. On that fateful day, our first responders took up the fight and did an amazing job in providing services to the citizens of New York City and Washington, D.C. They performed with great courage and under the most horrific circumstances imaginable. A few weeks after the events of that day, our armed forces took over the fight. As former Defense Secretary Gates said shortly before he left office, "Our troops and their families have paid a steep price these last 9 years, but have also shown resilience and strength in the best traditions of the country, a country that cherishes their service and the memories of those who have fallen. The sacrifices of those killed on 9/11 and since will never be forgotten. We have been a nation at war for almost a decade, and we have witnessed an entire generation of young Americans who have answered the call to serve. Since then, thousands have made the ultimate sacrifice, and their absence is also felt today and every day. In the Pentagon, there hangs a hand-stitched quilt in honor of the 184 victims who died there on 9/11. On the quilt is stitched these words, "In our hearts, we weep for you. In our minds, we honor you." Today, those words comfort us, because today we still weep for those we have lost, both at home and abroad, but we honor and cherish their courage and sacrifice. Admiral Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had this to say about 9/11. "Unspeakable carnage was visited upon us, but it did not conquer us. Unimaginable loss was felt by us, but it does not diminish us. Let us weep for what lies behind us. Let us honor what lies in front of us, but let us remember always what lies inside of us." On this day that has come to be known as Patriot Day, please take a moment to reflect upon the sacrifice that has been paid by so many so that the rest of us may continue to live in the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. And joining me today is Colonel Eric Alness, commander of the 135th Agribusiness Development Team. And we've been talking about an upcoming deployment to Afghanistan to help the farmers over there with an agri mission. Can you just briefly tell us what that's about again, sir?
Yes. What we will be doing is we'll be going to Afghanistan. The province we'll be going to is Zabul, Afghanistan, just to the northeast of the Kandahar province. And what we'll be doing is helping build the capacity of the Ministry of Agriculture to make sure that the ministry has ability to train the farmers, and also will work directly with the farmers to help them build a legal and sustainable agribusiness model within that province.
So is part of the goal to diversify the crops?
Yeah, and to eliminate some crops like poppies, specifically.
Knew it had to come down to that. When you were putting this unit together, were there specialties that you were looking for in terms of the troops, and how many soldiers are you taking with you?
Yes, it's a really unique mission, and it exists only in a mobilization status. We don't have agribusiness development teams as part of our normal organization. So what we did is we did a survey of our soldiers and found out who has a strong agricultural background that we could leverage. And specifically, what we did is we found people who were salesmen and people who also had a strong agribusiness background in the university setting. So, for example, one of our soldiers is a professor of agricultural economics at the University of North Dakota. And we have another individual who is a teacher in high school agribusiness issues, so that way that individual can also help teach the Ministry of Agriculture how to implement training within their area.
So am I to take it that you had a mission request and then you reached out to all of the Minnesota National Guard troops and built a team to put together to deal with the mission?
Yep. And on this, we have 12 people who have that agricultural background, and we have an additional 12 people who are staff who will facilitate their work and actually plan out the missions and make sure that the engagements are all set up so that those agricultural staff, when they go out to do the mission, they can spend their time focused as much as possible on the training. And then additionally, we have 34 people whose job is security. They'll be providing security for our entire team to make sure as we go out from our operating base out into the field to work with Afghanistan farmers that we'll be safe.
Now, Colonel, have you undergone some specialized training for this deployment?
Yeah, although these people are experts in agriculture, we've taken the opportunity to do some very interesting training with them. One of the first things we did is we went to a local Amish farm down in Utica, Minnesota, south of Rochester, so they could see how farmers work in a modern sense, but without the benefits of electricity, because there's very little electrification in Zabul province. So our people are beginning to understand the different culture that we'll be working in when we get to Zabul. Then additionally, we had training at the North Dakota State University, where we got about a week-long training on all aspects of agriculture, soil science, and so forth. It's kind of a semester in a week to make sure our people are trained up. We also did some training over at Senex Harvest States, where we had them put on 3 days worth of training for us to understand how cooperatives work, because cooperatives are a good model. Just as they worked here for the farmers in Minnesota starting in the 1920s to present, we see that as a good model in Afghanistan to help the farmers get control and build good economic models.
We're speaking with Colonel Eric Alness, commander of the 135th Agribusiness Development Team, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour right here on Newstalk, AM 1130. Colonel, is there a community aspect to this mission in terms of building relations with the Afghans?
Absolutely. As we go out and work with the Afghan individuals and farmers, it's very important for us to get down to local communities and help each community come up with a viable economic model so that they can sustain their business models and feed their people. One of the problems we have right now is from about January until about mid-March, they have a period of food insecurity where they're not even sure if they're going to have enough food to feed themselves. So if we can help build a stronger model where they get a solid food supply and know they can feed their families, that helps them have greater confidence in their government, and then thus they're more supportive of their government rather than the Taliban.
And Colonel, I think I've read that some other units have been doing this to help the Afghans for a while. How receptive are they to this training and to what you're going to be doing?
The Afghan people are very receptive of this training. They started the program in 2008, and it's a National Guard program nationwide, and it's really one of the things that the active duty just can't do because they don't have the people with a skill set. They might have people who grew up on a farm, but they're not farmers. They may not have worked for Cargill for 27 years in the value chain development or been a professor of agriculture economics, where we have those people within our ranks. So that allows us that opportunity to leverage those things nationwide. And as a result, in that beginning in 2008, now we have 9 different teams in Afghanistan helping that out and extremely well received by the Afghan people and the government.
So you've had the luxury of being able to build your team with the resources and the experience necessary in order to effectively conduct this mission.
Yeah, and it's been a real privilege and honor being selected by the state to lead this team, because it is such a great opportunity to make a difference and really help increase its security and build a viable model for that country in the future. And the team members coming on, it's just a wonderful opportunity for them to take skills that they had on the civilian side, tie that together with the uniform they wear so proudly, and use both of them in the same mission.
Colonel, as a civilian and an old Air Force guy, it's fascinating to me to see all the different things that the Minnesota National Guard is doing in all the different capacities. How that must be just really interesting and good for the soldiers to be able to participate in all these new programs.
Yeah, and that's one of the strengths of the Guard, too, is that the capability of the Guard, you know, we've never seen where it ends, because when the domestic emergency comes up, when the active duty calls us to fulfill the mission, you look around and you seem to find that we have that capability within our ranks some way. So it's just amazing how the Guard, we say one of our mottos is always ready, already there. So as some of these missions come up and we start looking at our ranks, we say, yeah, we can do that.
Because you have the citizen soldiers, you've got all kinds of experience out there, don't you?
Yes.
And Colonel, we're just about out of time, but before we go, what kind of shape, how's the morale in the Minnesota National Guard? How are the soldiers and airmen?
You know, I was going to say the morale in the Guard is fabulous, never been better, but I tell you, it continues to get stronger. The people in the Guard, they are so proud of what they do, of the service, and the respect that we see from the community. Just walking around, recently I was at the fair, and just having people come up and thank me for my service. And one thing I always make sure I do, too, is I thank the people that served before us, the Vietnam veteran, the career of veterans, thank them for their service, because really we stand on the shoulder of giants, and we appreciate that so much.
Colonel, I hope you have a great trip and a successful mission to Afghanistan and get home safe.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us today on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you very much, and thank you for hosting this.
Thank you, Colonel. That was Colonel Eric Allness, commander of the 135th Agribusiness Development Team on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase and discuss how an iconic Minnesota organization is recognizing Yellow Ribbon volunteers that go above and beyond for service members and their families. Ken Rail, a retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel, remains a leader in every sense of the word. Working as the chair of Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Southeast Minnesota for over 2 years, Ken has been instrumental in his Yellow Ribbon network. He has helped establish and sustain action plans for Rochester Community and Technical College, the City of Rochester, and Olmsted County. He has spoken to countless groups to create awareness for support of military families. At each opportunity, he has taken the time to thank Yellow Ribbon Network volunteers and supporters as he instills a deeper meaning in what they contribute. Ken has taken the idea of serving military families in our midst and made it a reality in Southeast Minnesota. Now, with the help of the Minnesota Twins, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is able to reward the hard work and sacrifice of volunteers like Ken. On July 21st, he was given 4 tickets to Target Field and recognized during a pregame ceremony. Thank you, Minnesota Twins, for showcasing how remarkable organizations are going beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon connects service members and their families with organizations, agencies, companies, community support, training, services, and resources to bring our service members all the way home. To learn how you can make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. When we return, we'll learn about the Minnesota National Guard's 148th Fighter Wing and 133rd Airlift Wing. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk, AM 1130. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelido.
10 years ago, the world watched in horror and disbelief as terrorists attacked the United States. These events brought America together. We united in mourning, and we united in resolve. Our country is still at war, but today most people don't think about faraway places like Iraq and Afghanistan on a daily basis. Since 9/11, over 2 million Americans have served in the military. Young men and women put their lives on hold and leave their families, their hometowns, and their jobs to go to war. Yet they return home changed, in many ways stronger, more resilient, and more experienced. But even more importantly, our veterans are coming home ready to work and move forward in their lives. They are bright, agile, resourceful leaders, and some are struggling to find employment. I want to encourage our community and our listeners to consider hiring a veteran. The military trains men and women to be successful, adaptable, and focused. They have demonstrated their skills and attributes under the most adverse conditions, and they're ready to bring these qualities to your organization. For more information, visit us at minnesotaveteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelido. You can find out more about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs by calling 1-888-LINK-VET or online at minnesotaveteran.org. Joining us now is Colonel Stephen Wabrowitz from the 148th Fighter Wing Maintenance Group, and he's the commander up there in Duluth. Colonel, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
My pleasure to be here, Tom.
Colonel, can you tell me how long have you been in the service?
In May, it was 27 years. And I started my career in the through ROTC at the University of Minnesota Duluth, Det 420. And I spent 7 years on active duty as a KC-135 pilot. And then my wife and I decided we wanted to raise our family back in Duluth, and so we moved back home, and then the Guard presented itself and gave me an opportunity to continue my career and service to my country, and I've been there ever since.
And you've been deployed?
I have been deployed on active duty as a KC-135 pilot. I deployed to Saudi Arabia as part of Desert Shield and Desert Storm for 6 months. And then in the Air National Guard, for a period of time, I was a Medical Services Corps officer, and I deployed to Afghanistan as a liaison officer between the United States and Korea and Egyptian and Korean or Jordanian hospitals, where we were providing training for Afghanistan doctors and midwives, because the infant and maternal fatality rate in the rural areas was greater than 50%. And so we were providing training for the doctors and the midwives to help some of those people survive rather than perish.
And Colonel, can you tell us a little bit about the 148th Fighter Wing and its mission in Duluth as part of the Minnesota National Guard?
Certainly. The 148th Fighter Wing is just over 1,000 people strong. And we draw most of our members from the Duluth Superior area. However, we also have members from as far away as the UP and Michigan, and a significant number from down here in the Twin Cities. The 148th flies the F-16 Falcon Block 50 aircraft, one of the most capable F-16s. And we are right now in the conversion phase from a previous block of the F-16, and that conversion takes about 2 years to train not only all the maintainers that work for me, but also the pilots, specifically learning the new mission that goes along with that aircraft.
And Colonel, it's my understanding that the upgrade to these new F-16s means that Duluth, the 148th, is going to be around for a while, isn't it?
Well, they say it's going to keep us in business for at least another 25 years, which is a good thing.
And Colonel, I was recently had the pleasure of visiting the 148th last year, and in the briefing, I thought it was fascinating that you've gotten some awards recently for being one of the best fighter wings in the United States Air Force or Reserves.
Yes, sir, Tom. The 148th has a proud history of doing extremely well on inspections and other deployments. But the most significant award we received recently was the Raytheon Trophy, which is awarded to the best air defense fighter unit in the United States Air Force. So that's inclusive of all active duty and Air National Guard units. And it's only the third time that an Air National Guard unit has won that trophy in its history. So once again, the Bulldogs stood strong and did Minnesota proud.
And Colonel, I also understand you've got some other capabilities up there. You provide the firefighting for the airport, and you've got a bomb disposal squad as well.
We do. You know, the most visible part of the 148th, of course, is the F-16 that the Duluth residents see flying overhead every day. But we also have firefighters, like you say. We have security police. We have services people that provide the food for us. And the explosive ordnance disposal team that is a big part of the community, because we provide explosive ordnance disposal services for northeastern Minnesota. And so when somebody finds an explosive device of some type, more often than not, it's when Grandpa dies and he had some dynamite in his barn or a World War II trophy that needs to be disposed of. It's our guys that go out and take care of that.
Fascinating that you've got some terrific capabilities up there that people don't really think about.
Correct.
And, sir, your role with the organization?
Pardon me?
Your role with the 148th?
Yes.
Your job?
Oh, sir. My role. I'm sorry. My role as the maintenance group commander. So I have approximately 400 folks that work with me, and they have a number of different specialties. You know, it takes a lot of people with a lot of brains to work on an F-16. It's an extremely complex machine. And so not only do I have folks that launch and recover it on the flight line, but I have electric environmental people, hydraulic systems people. In the avionics, of course, is an extremely complex package on the airplane, and so I have a significant number of people that work on that system. And then obviously the people that build and load the weapons, which is what the F-16 is there for, is to deliver weapons on target.
We're speaking with Colonel Stephen Waberitz, the 148th Fighter Wing Maintenance Group Commander, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour right here on News Talk, AM 1130. Colonel, it's been 10 years since we were attacked, and of course you've heard earlier in the show about all the deployments for the Minnesota National Guard. How have all these deployments impacted the 148th?
Well, you know, Tom, that's what we're there for. You know, 9/11 obviously had a significant impact on the entire country, and the 148th in the first few years after 9/11 flew a tremendous amount of air coverage over the United States in a number of different locations, And we train every day for the mission that we can be called upon for any time. And with all the deployments that we have going on continuously, not just the F-16s going every so often, but we have deployed our firefighters, we deployed our security police, we've deployed our civil engineers to Afghanistan, and then we individually have people going all the time to different locations to support the effort in the AOR.
Colonel, I understand that it's been 10 years, almost 10 years exactly, since September 11, 2001. Were your F-16s in the air that day?
They were in the air that day, sir, both here in Minnesota and also down in Florida, and then continuously in a number of different areas around the country after that.
So domestic security is part of the mission?
Absolutely. That's our everyday mission. We have F-16s on alert in Duluth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And, Colonel, does the 148th have any airmen deployed at this time?
We do. We don't have a large deployment right now, but we have, I believe we have somewhere in the vicinity of 24 people deployed. We constantly have requests to send people that have specific specialties. And we always have people that are looking to deploy, because one thing you find out as part of your military career is your best experiences come from deployments. And so we constantly have people that are willing to raise their hand when the call comes to go.
So a little different than the soldiers from the Army units who usually deploy as a unit.
Right.
You get specific requests for specialties from other deployed Air Force units, active duty and reserve guard.
We do. When the active duty can't fulfill all the requirements, they usually come to the guard and ask for our help. And we always have people ready to raise their hands and go. But then again, you know, every couple years, the 148th will deploy about 400 people and a certain number of jets. So once we're done with our conversion to the new F-16, we'll probably have an opportunity to deploy as a large organization again.
And, Colonel, we're just about out of time for this segment, but how are the airmen of the 148th Fighter Wing? How is the morale? How are the troops?
You know, the morale is fantastic at the 148th, and our unit strength goes to prove that, because we're tasked to provide X number of bodies, and we're constantly, at the end of the year, have about 105% strength every year, year after year after year, leading most of the United States in end strength. And that's, we say that's part of being a Minnesotan, is doing your service to your country, and we're proud to do that at the 148th.
And the Minnesota National Guard is an organization that people want to be a part of these days, isn't it?
Absolutely, sir.
Colonel, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure being here, Tom.
That was Colonel Stephen Waberitz from the 148th Fighter Wing Maintenance Group Commander on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour right here on AM 1130. We need to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Joining us for this segment is Colonel Greg Hasse, commander of the 133rd Airlift Wing of the Minnesota National Guard. Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, sir.
Oh, Tom, thanks so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Colonel, can you share with us how long have you been in the Minnesota National Guard?
Well, it's hard to believe, but I'm pushing 28 years here, so it's been a long run, but a fun run.
Went quick, too, didn't it?
Oh, gosh, it's unbelievable. So it's between the deployments and the work and, you know, flying the jet and taking care of a family, it's been a lot of fun, very rewarding as well.
And, Colonel, what interested you in the Guard in the first place?
Well, it's an interesting story, but I started in Army ROTC in college, and I thought I would go fly helicopters, and I went to North Dakota State. Had a summer internship as an engineer with the highway department there, and a guy said, well, why don't you look at the Air National Guard? And I said, what is the Air National Guard? And so that was my first acquaintance to the Air National Guard, and I went down to the recruiter and ended up signing up. And here I am today. So I started in the Fargo unit with the Happy Hooligans and worked my way up to Minneapolis here.
Well, Colonel, I'm glad you got to the Air Force. That's what I was in. So we're surrounded by these Army guys all the time. We have to have a little equal opportunity.
There you go. We are outnumbered.
And, Colonel, you've been in the Guard for 28 years. Have you been out on deployments as well?
I have. I look back at my career. It's been a rich history. You know, we started actually in the Cold War. I was flying operationally in 88, so I actually got some time through the Berlin corridor, ended up in Tempelhof in Germany in Berlin there. So that was a fun run through the Cold War, ended up a lot of shield and storm stuff. They stationed us like in Europe for a period of time as backfill for the active component, but we also did missions out of Turkey. So that was an interesting time. And then through the course of peacekeeping years in Somalia, I spent some time over there for the famine relief, and then a lot of time in Bosnia, Kosovo as well. And then, of course, 9/11 has been pretty much nonstop since then.
You've been a world traveler, haven't you?
Yeah, 5,000 hours of, you know, rattle time through the Hercules. So it's a lot of flying time on the old Herc.
Colonel, can you tell us about the 133rd Airlift Wing of the Minnesota National Guard?
Yeah, the 133rd is a really unique wing. It's 130s, C-130s, a Hercules, four-engine prop-driven airplane. That's kind of the core mission that we do. And so I'll just spend a little time with that core mission because the Herc's such a uniquely capable airplane. So three diverse missions that we will do. The first is air land, where we can actually go land the airplane on a 3,000-foot dirt strip, 60 feet wide. Did a lot of that in Somalia on unimproved strips, just landing out on a dry lake bed to try to feed the hungry.
We did that in Vietnam, too.
Oh, yeah, so. Yeah. On the old torch pits, right, or in the torch lights. And yep. And then, of course, we have the airdrop. And so what we can't get to you on the ground, we'll get to you via the air. And the precision today is just remarkable. We've got these systems that will steer guided parafoils all the way to the point zero. And so, for instance, if there's some soldiers or Marines that are stranded on a mountaintop somewhere and they need relief, they need supplies, we can get it to them. And we can just get it to them right at their footsteps or real close. So that's a unique capability that we offer as well. And we can do that day, night, in any kind of weather. And the final thing is, God help us, if we need to, we can aeromedically evacuate people out of a hostile area. And our aeromeds do just wonderful work. It's amazing. And the story I like to tell is there's actually a point last year in Afghanistan where you could have had a Minnesota touch all the way back over to the United States. So we had our aeromeds stationed in Helmand Province, and they were doing aerovac on Army helicopters, taking them up to Bagram, where they would have been airlifted via C-130 back to Landstuhl or C-17 by our aeromeds who were stationed in Bagram. And then we had aeromeds in Andrews Air Force Base in Washington who would actually fly a C-17 over to Landstuhl and pick up the wounded and bring them back. So literally you could have had a Minnesota touch all the way from Afghanistan, Helmand Province, back to Minnesota. I think that tells a lot about where our people are and how much work they've been doing in the last 10 years.
We wish the listeners could see you, sir. You got a big smile on your face. You're pretty proud of that, aren't you?
Yeah, it's, you know, when you see those folks, I mean, there's just an energy draw that happens, right? So they're energy givers, and you naturally get the energy from those aeromeds. I mean, we have to really keep somewhat of a rein on them. Compassion fatigue is one of those occurrences that happen to some of our medical providers, where they're so involved with giving care to people that we almost have to hold them back at times, for they'll do it to the detriment of themselves. And so certainly we want to keep them healthy as well, and we want to watch out for them so they're not always constantly running and running. They just did a remarkable mission down in Honduras in conjunction with their medical group. They were there for about 10 days and serviced over 3,800 patients, from new glasses to immunizations to dental checkups to, you know, you name it. They did general medical to the population of Honduras. What a great thing. Just a couple weeks ago, we did a vet stand down at the Boy Scout base camp out at Fort Snelling. Nearly 300 veterans came through. In a matter of 2 days. And so it's just a wonderful thing, a service that they provide back to our community as well as nation building that we do throughout South America and the greater part of Europe.
Colonel, we talked a bit about the federal mission in support of Afghanistan and around the world, but there's a state mission for your C-130s and the 133rd as well, isn't there?
There is. It's huge. You know, they're very transferable. I mean, a lot of what we can do overseas, we can do here stateside as well. I always like to look back in the 07 floods, and whenever you have a flood or even the 97 floods in western Minnesota, is that you create islands. And if you create islands and there's people there, those people are stranded. If the helicopters can't get enough goods to them, we can always get something to them. And if there's a runway there, we can get a lot of stuff to them. Another easy example, you know, regionally, like Katrina, and now most recently with Irene, we have the ability to take a combat element that can manage ground assets and put it in place at an austere location with a medical staging facility. So what we can do is bring assets in, resources in, and take victims out. So we create an air bridge in and out of these hostile areas, you know, due to catastrophe. When I say hostile area, you know, I looked at Katrina, and Katrina was this huge, huge event. And everybody rushed to the outer perimeter and said, ouch, I'm stuck. Well, we went to the inside. We went to Gulfport. We went to New Orleans, and we set up actual centers there. We took the fuel that was there in their tanks. We turned it over into energy via generators and started the runways operating again 24/7. In 2010, we were in Haiti. You know, you may have heard of all the airplanes that were getting turned around in Haiti. But what happens at the particular moment is when those airplanes are getting turned around, there's no lights there, no instrument approaches, and no radar, right? And so what we did was started operating at night because of our autonomous systems and the ability to go in on night vision goggles. So we actually almost increased the throughput by two because we're operating 24/7 now.
We're speaking with Colonel Greg Hasse, the commander of the 133rd Airlift Wing from the Minnesota National Guard on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour right here on News Talk, AM 1130. Colonel, we've just got a few minutes left. How many airmen do you have in the 133rd, and how many are deployed today, and what kind of shape are your troops in?
We've got about 100 deployed steady state at any given time. The bulk of them right now are our civil engineers that are over in Kuwait and receiving the assets that are coming out of Iraq. To date, we've deployed about 560, or just short of half of the airmen within the wing. That's been pretty nominal through the course of the last 10 years. All said and done, you know, we're pushing close to 900,000 active duty days that have been executed by the wing in less than 10 years now. So it's been a huge effort that our airmen have been putting in through these 10 years post 9/11.
So, Colonel, the days of 2 weeks in the summer and 1 weekend a month are long since gone, but all of the airmen in the 133rd are well aware of that, aren't they?
They are. It's a new normal. The metric that's easy to throw out is that about 750 of our airmen put in an average of 120 active days a year. So over half of the wing are putting in 120 days. So, you know, easy math on a 365-day year, that's a lot of effort. And then you couple that with a civilian job and a family and try to balance all that. There's a lot of challenges for our military today.
That's a lot more days a year than I put in the 2 years after I got out of the Air Force and spent with the 133rd.
Yeah.
Sir, we're just about out of time. What kind of shape are your troops in? How's the morale?
Well, you know, there's a lot of great programs that have came about since 9/11, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. There's some care programs. And I think it's just a general awareness that we need to get to, is people need to know that there's support out there. So we do a lot of work in the awareness area. If you need help, please let us know. And there's been a lot of traction with that through the course of the last couple of years. And that's, I think, the hardest thing that we have to do is to offer our airmen the opportunity to just say, I need help. And once we can break through that barrier, we can get the help for you.
And Colonel, just before we go here, are there opportunities for young people to join the 133rd today?
Oh, absolutely. We sit at about 104 to 105% manned, so we generally don't have a problem recruiting. But we're always looking for the best and the brightest that Minnesota has to offer. We like to, you know, really say our mantra is winners build winners. We've been a winning organization for a lot of years. We're citizens serving America and airmen defending freedom. So if you want to serve your country and be part of a great community in Minnesota, the 133rd is the place for you.
Colonel, thanks for joining us today out at the Minnesota State Fair.
Tom, thank you so much, and thanks for all your support.
Thank you, sir. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel Eric Aldous, Colonel Stephen Wabrowitz from the 148th Fighter Wing in Duluth, Colonel Greg Hasse from the 133rd Airlift Wing, Commissioner Larry Shelado, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Please join us next week as we talk about the 3M Freedom Award and the Alina Hospitals and Clinics Military Support Program. That's next Sunday morning at 7, right here on News Talk, AM 1130. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.